News Radio, broadcasting studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, where it is 109 degrees, according to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Chris Davies here.
That's what it said on the car external temperature gauge.
Yeah, it's hot. So welcome to listening.
Toasty.
And so everybody's listening. And also, we're broadcasting in parallel with Turfs Up Radio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I hope they're in clear space of the storm.
Yeah, Hurricane Dorian has passed by and now heading up to North Carolina's coast.
Yeah, so we wish everybody best of luck and hope nothing happened to them and their studios and Darren specifically. And anyway, that's what I have to say. So welcome tonight. It's a great show. It's a great day. Beautiful day out. Got some good things happening. We got two great guests.
Sure.
One is our favorite thing. Oh, we should mention about the contest.
Oh, yes. Everybody else absolutely. Knows. Extreme Water Makeover. So the contest entry period is over. It ended last Saturday on August 31st.
At midnight,
August 31st. We got just a ton of entries, and we're really appreciative of that. It is awesome to see just how conscientious people are about their lawns and, of course, how willing they are to get a nice water makeover.
It went out to over 250,000 homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So we're very blessed for that. Anyway, we're narrowing it down to the top three, and we'll be sending out notices this coming week and contacting those people to set up a meeting and go look at the properties.
Site visit.
And then hopefully the week or two after that, we will pick a winner.
Yeah.
And have a big PR event with newspapers, TV, and all the sponsors. That'll be great. I can't wait.
Yep. It'll be fun.
Excellent. Anyway, we might as well bring our first guest on, and we love her to death. She is for everybody. She's the purveyor of mavensnotebook.com, and as we tell everybody every week, please go to that place and be a subscriber. You can also help support that if you want. Just go to mavensnotebook.com. If you want to know everything about what's happening in California before the TV and radio people know, go see her, go listen to her, go read her. She's great. That's a good thing. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris.
Wow, what a great welcome. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
You're very welcome. Well, we appreciate you a lot, just so you
know
that.
So you got 250,000 responses?
That was how many people that got met the contest notification got mailed to.
Yeah, we got three responses.
You got to narrow that down to three. Wow.
Yeah, well, it wasn't too hard.
It was easy because we got five.
We only got five responses.
No, we
didn't.
man. If I lived in your area, I'd be putting my name in the hat, no doubt.
Got a lot of responses.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and, you know, good luck to those who entered and, you know, wow, great things. And, you know, your next guest that's coming on, I got to say, Paula Kehoe in San Francisco.
Yes.
You know, they have done some really, really cool things.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm sure she's going to tell you all about it. So I don't want to steal her thunder. But, you all should listen because, you know, they've really done some really great things there.
She knows you.
yeah, and you know they've been sponsors of Maven's Notebook. So, but I mean that's just full disclosure kind of thing. But you know they've done some really great things. So, but you know, anyways, that's for her to tell you all about. So
all you listeners should
hang in there because you know they've done. It's exciting stuff.
Well, we're excited for that. Would you like to stay on just for 2 minutes or a couple and say hi to her?
We'll see how it works out.
Okay, that'll be great. like to keep people together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rob and I did a bunch of research and looked at what those guys were doing up there in San Francisco area. So we have a lot of great questions for her, and just looking forward to the answers and her giving us some in-depth detail on how they achieved the unique things that they did.
Absolutely.
I know she's calling in a little bit earlier, as we always ask them to do, about 6:20. So you're still on the air with her, with us, and you can say something then if you want, or stick on later. It's up to you. You're more than welcome.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll see.
So what's I got your Maven's notebook in front of me, and so does Chris. And there's so many things to talk about, but I figured you'd tell us what the most important things are.
You know, I think, at least I am in the water world, and I think a lot of others as well. We're waiting to see about these biological opinions. And these are, this has been actually reported in the media, the LA Times and other places. You know, these are really the rules for operating the project. And President Trump issued a memo and kind of had, you know, put some pressure on to have some predetermined outcomes, which would be more water. But, the biologists it's questionable about what's in these biological opinions, and they haven't been released yet. So that means there's lots of speculation. And the LA Times reported that, you know, they would endanger winter run salmon. And it's, you know, they were due at the end of June. And then they made an announcement it would be the end of August, which I should point out has already passed.
Yep.
I mean, I was totally expecting them to dump them out on Friday, August 29th or whatever.
Well, it's a holiday weekend.
Holiday.
Absolutely.
You know, 4 p.m. I mean, I was waiting. I was sitting on my email, and they didn't come. So, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe now tomorrow. I don't know. But we'll see. We're all kind of waiting to see, you know, what they say. Now, I went up in Sacramento last week, and I attended an event where they had Secretary Wade Crowfoot and Metropolitan General Manager Jeff Keitlinger and Jennifer Pierre, who represents the state water contractors. And they had, I mean, it was actually a really great conversation, and I have covered it. It's actually right now at the top of the at the top of the scroll at Maven's Notebook, if you go there now.
Yep.
And they talked about all the hot button issues, the tunnels and SB1 and the voluntary agreements. But when it came to the biological opinions, they discussed that a lot too. And, you know, they were saying, at least Jeff Keitlinger was, you know, with Metropolitan Water District, was saying, you know, it's not what they're proposing is they're not like broad changes. They're not, you know, your jaw's not going to drop. You know, in some ways they're more favorable to us, in other ways they're not. The whole panel kind of played them off like this is a normal thing, and every 10 years we look at this and nothing new about this. But that's not how it's playing out in the press. And we're just not going to know until, you know, the biological opinions actually come out.
And then there'll be questions and discussions about those.
Oh, yes. And there will be litigation because, you know, that just kind of always seems to come with these things. And, you know, the state has been very aggressive, I think, in, you know, resisting some of these changes at the federal level and filing all sorts of lawsuits. So, you know, I don't, you know, and the state of California has done its own process for operation of these water projects. And although, you know, at the panel discussion, they were saying, you know, it's all going to be coordinated. And it's all going to be worked out. It really feels to me like it's been a very separate process with whatever's going on at the state, whatever going on at the federal level, and they kind of have different objectives. And I can't see how they're not going to be not conflicting. But, I have to say, the you know, when I have questioned people, you know, they have said that they're it's not going to be a problem. Not sure I'm really buying that,
yeah.
But we'll see, because, you know, the federal opinions are due any day now, as are the state opinions, and are they going to match? Because it's a real question. So
I'll put a wager they don't.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're not, and I'm thinking that may be why we haven't seen them yet.
Yeah.
But you know, I am just guessing. I don't want anyone in the listening audience to think that I have. That anybody's giving me a heads up on it, because that's not true. I'm just guessing here, you know, pulling something out of my head.
But if they did release that information, you'd be the first one to get it.
Absolutely, and I would fling that out on my email.
Fling it out.
You know, as a matter of fact, you know, as soon as I get off this phone call, I'm going to go check my email.
Mr. Chris here, yes. Can you make a sling sound?
No, what sling sound? I mean, like a cha-ching or what? I'm just thinking that Chris is not, Maven's Notebook is not someone to bet against.
No.
When it comes to California water news. So,
absolutely not.
So I'd put those 20s away and start putting out singles if you're going to go with that.
Absolutely.
If you're going to go with that bet. Hey, so Chris, I know next week there's a Sierra Water Work Group Summit coming up. I don't know if you're going or at least going to report on it.
Which water summit?
Sierra Water Work Group Summit.
Oh, you know, no, I'm not going to be going up there. I really wanted to, but haven't been able, you know, other obligations.
Other obligations. That...
Yeah, can't make it everywhere. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of interesting stuff, and a lot of focus on our forested watersheds, which is, you know, really very important. So, you know, I think we're learning that everything is connected to everything else.
Yeah. So I'm just tilting the head to Rob here, because we saw on Maven's Notebook that there's an ambassador program opening up for the Santa Ana watershed. So,
yep.
I mean, that's in our neck of the woods, right? So
absolutely. And, you know, let's talk about that for
sure.
A moment, because I know listeners in your area are, you know, you're broadcasting to this area. It's really aimed at anyone who's in any sort of capacity, official capacity, that has to make decisions about the watershed. And it's just not water agency people, but county people, you know, local agency people, city people that deal with land use issues. They're really trying to cast a wide net, bring a lot of people in for this program. So if that, you know, if it sounds like that's you, then you should definitely sign up for this program. They're going to have three workshops.
Right.
In the fall, you know, over the upcoming months. And this is a great opportunity for people to really understand the issues in the watershed. So...
Right,
you know.
Right. Issues around drought and fire and the flood cycle and water and land use, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, the opportunity for networking and just meeting people in this industry and getting directed viewpoint from them of what's going on. I mean, that's valuable right there, just the connections, right?
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the Santa Ana Watershed Projects Authority, the SAPA people, I mean, they are one of the first groups in the state to take on managing a watershed at the entire watershed management level. I mean, they are a model for other regions of the state that are trying to figure out how to manage these issues. And, you know, the SAPA, under the leadership of Celeste Cantu in the beginning, and I'm not sure who's leading it now, but I'm sure they're forging ahead on the same path, but you know, very forward-thinking. You know, they're one of the first groups to think about, you know, the forest up above us as being something that they needed to think about, and they needed to work with people up above them, and they did that, you know. talking to the people who manage the forest and figuring out how to solve some of the problems downstream. I mean, they thought of this under Celeste Cantu's, you know, leadership, thought of this and worked on a watershed level. You know, it's in a lot of ways, in so many ways, Southern California has been a leader in water management and showing the rest of the state how it can be done with the Orange County and what they've done with groundwater and managing groundwater and the way that they do it with their recycled water and all that. I mean, it's amazing and it's incredible. And as incredible as that is the Santa Ana, you know, Watershed Project Authority and what they have done with managing water resources in the Santa Ana area. I mean, it's great. It's why there can be such great housing and economic activity and everything, because they have really stepped up to the plate and figured out how to make that all possible. So.
Yeah. Now, Celeste, I've known Celeste Cantu for about 16, 17 years, and she's always been the perfect person to do that job. And in fact, she was on a show a couple of times. The last one was about a week after she left, and I don't recall exactly where she went to, or they were starting something for Hispanic, something with irrigation and water. I don't recall what that was. And I hadn't talked to her since, but she was here, like I said, the last week she was at her job. She came and did the show, and we appreciated that.
Yeah, Rob and I have talked a couple of times about SAPA's, you know, holistic approach, right, to looking at the entire watershed, right, from the top to bottom.
And even considering that for your own home, consider your property as a watershed,
yeah,
and how
that,
do you manage
that? Yeah, yeah, that was the connection that they were trying to make and still trying to make with people. So, you know, we may have a few more people from where Rob and I work listening tonight, because they were had the opportunity to see Rob and I do a presentation today, so hopefully this will gain some legs and we'll be able to do something with it.
Absolutely,
in our own organization.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. What else is interesting?
Oh gosh, you know, the other issue that's sort of emerging at this time is SB1, which is a proposal in the state legislature to combat some of the rollbacks that the Trump administration is doing environmentally. And it is an issue that agriculture is very much against. They want to see this bill defeated, and the environmentalists are very much for seeing this get passed. And I don't know exactly how it's all going to play out in the legislature. We're all seeing both sides are sort of trying to energize their base, you know, their grassroots base to call their legislature on either side of the issue. It's an admirable thought, I think, to, you know, try to keep California is the leader on some of these environmental preservation regulations that we've made, and it's admirable to try to, you know, continue that momentum. The flip side is that it's really hard to have a one-size-fits-all approach to things.
Sure. Right.
And, you know, some of these regulations, you know, yeah, they should be preserved. And others, you know, you don't want to lock in things. But the idea with SB1 is it's going to lock in certain levels of protections, you know, before Trump started making these changes. I can't at this point say personally whether I think that's good or bad policy. But I think there's a lot of questions about it, because, you just can't say it in a one-size-fits-all for a country as diverse as, the United States is, that, you know, environmental protections and certain things, you know, cannot change.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's that's good policy, but, you know, again, I'm not sure.
Yeah, from a policy standpoint, I don't know, you know, what the personal view is it is of it for Rob and I, but we've certainly discussed it. But keeping on a legislative focus, we also read today that the State Water Resources Control Board, right, looked at especially the Office of Administrative Law, or OAL as they're called, just looked at some definitions and procedures for discharge of fill and dredged material.
Wetlands regulations.
Right.
I probably should have put that in the title because that's, you know.
You like to put tongue twisters in there.
Yeah, it was a long process that they did to come up with some new definition of what is a wetland and some new regulations to go with that. It was played in the press as something that was a response to what Trump was doing, but in reality, it really wasn't. It's been going on for 10, 12 years now. And they finally just got it resolved. But, new regulations to kind of fill in the gaps where the federal regulations
didn't have enough meat, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it's basically going to affect water agencies and those that have, you know, artificial wetlands or other, you know, flood basins, things that, things like that. And it's not something I think that's going to be totally onerous, but there will be extra review measures that they will need to take for these projects. Mm-hmm. If you're a water agency, this is a particular concern for you because there are new things that you have to pay attention to. But as a member of the general public, you know.
Well, some of my neighbors qualify for wetlands on their front lawns. They water too much.
Yeah. Well, you should go talk to them.
Yes. Yeah. I do. I talk about smart controllers and efficient nozzles and things of that sort. But, you know, I knew a guy, and I won't mention who it is.
No names.
He owns a large salt farm business. And his grass, when you walk on it, I would sink down to my ankles in it.
Yeah,
and
it squishes.
Why are you doing this? He says, well, I own a salt farm, and everybody knows that, and I have to have really good-looking grass. I said, yeah, but you agree with smart controllers and everything else. But he didn't care. He just kept flooding that thing. It was almost like flood irrigation on a farm.
Yeah.
It was that bad, but
I had a neighbor down the street. He had the most. I think he still does. This gorgeous lawn that he never, you know, lawn in the front that he never walks on. He doesn't have family. They're never out on it. It's just this, you know, lush piece of grass. And he used to irrigate it like 3 times a day. It was like crazy. I think in the water, in the water drought times, he actually did cut back a little bit, but, you know, it's crazy. But at least I can say one thing. In the neighborhood I live, we don't have huge lawns. So he watered the snot out of this little patch of grass.
Yeah, but, right. Waters the sod out of it.
But doesn't make it right, you know.
I love that. Waters the sod out of it.
Well, we're gonna go to commercial, and Chris, we appreciate that you're on. If you want to stay on and say hello to Paula, that would be great.
And, I think I got to go make dinner for the family here, but have a great interview.
Okay.
She's got a lot of cool things to say.
She's a great woman. I saw her in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and that's where we met. So thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next week. And everybody, stand by for some interesting commercials.
Bye, Chris. Have a good week.
Take care, guys. Good evening.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aww.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone. We appreciate everybody listening today, and we thank Chris Austin for again being our opening act, as we put it.
Always a spectacular time with her.
Yeah, and like I said, she knows everything before everybody else knows it, so we appreciate that from her. Anyway, we got another guest who's very exciting, and I met this lady in Santa Fe, New Mexico, during the Next Gen Water Summit a couple weeks back. And her name is Paula Kehoe, and she's the Director of Water Resources for the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. So we'd like to welcome Paula to the show. Paula, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
I thoroughly enjoyed your presentation at that Next Gen Symposium, and I'm glad I bumped into you and talked, and I'm glad you accepted our invitation to be on our show. Chris Austin was just on. I think you know her, and she told us to say hi to you. So
she's wonderful.
Yes, she is. So a lot of things I always ask, I start off and be real kind of casual here, and it will be a casual conversation. But how did you get into the water business? I mean, I didn't come from the water world, and Chris did.
I did. Started off on the business end of a shovel.
So. And you've been doing it for how long?
40 years.
40
plus.
Years, wow. So, you know, I always like to ask, how did somebody start in this, and why did they start? Maybe you can kind of give us a little casual answer to that.
Well, I've been, my whole career has been in public service, so I've been working for the city and county of San Francisco for about 27 years. So I'm a dedicated civil servant, which I'm very proud of. And I started my career at the city actually working on pollution prevention on the wastewater side with the city. And I was able to move over to the water side and work on water supply diversification, which I've been working on for the past 15 years.
Wow. So in the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, then what kind of makes up your day? What are your main responsibilities there? Do you have kind of a usual day, or is everything as
she's
we say
the big
a crapshoot?
Boss.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot going on here at the utility. So in my position, I work within the water enterprise, but just for your audience, the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, we are part of the city and county of San Francisco government, and we have water, power, and sewer services here, so multiple utilities. So part of my work and every day here is about focusing on integrated water management, How can we create water projects that are either conservation or developing new local water supplies, but that also have multiple benefits? And how can we coordinate with our wastewater enterprise and our power enterprise to develop programs and projects, again, that have multiple benefits from an integrated water management approach?
Well, I know you know you're Californian, and we all experienced this drought not too long ago. But how has the drought changed your focus on water management?
I think that, well, San Francisco has had a long history and focus on water conservation and using water efficiently. So coming out of the drought in the early 1990s, again, it really became a prominent focus for the utility that water use efficiency is our number one water management strategy, and we've continued that for more than 25 years. So water use efficiency and conservation is part of our core business, and we've continued that today. And through the drought, our customers, all types of customers, whether commercial, industrial, or residential, all pitched in to help us get through the drought. And they all did their part, and we actually had a 20% reduction here in San Francisco. Our average residential before the drought, residential per capita was 49 gallons per person per day, and went down to 41 gallons per person per day. So, again, everyone pitched in and helped work collaboratively with the utility.
Those are, I mean, they're absolutely great numbers, right?
Yeah.
When you look at the average water use in the state of California, I think still now, if you look on the side, it's, I think it's somewhere between 90 and 110 gallons, which is the average, right? Gallons per day per person.
I think it's more than that, but
and it might be somewhere between that and 140 gallons per minute. But to get to that level, I mean, just an awesome achievement. You should be very proud. So did you see? I'm contemplating here on when you said to us the 27 years you've had in the industry. So you've seen several droughts over that time. I'm sure, Paula, and have you noticed, you know, kind of a change in the attitude from the communities and stakeholders in at the end or from the beginning to the end of those drought experiences?
Yeah, I think all consumers throughout California really know that we live in an area that is subjected to droughts, and that we need to use water efficiently, and we need to conserve water. Certainly, again, in San Francisco, as we've been promoting conservation for decades, it's really a partnership with our community. We provide rebates, and we provide water-efficient fixtures and aerators and showerheads and other types of programs like gray water systems and other types of outreach. But it's also, again, the communities participating because they want to conserve water and they want to be part of the solution and part of using water efficiently in San Francisco.
What are some of the ways that you get to your customer base or your client base? I mean, how do you approach them? What advertising or word of mouth or radio spot, that kind of thing? How do you get to your
Or live events?
Yeah, live events.
D, all of the above.
All of the above.
Yeah. So, you know, outreach events, we try to go out to the community if there's a community meeting or if there's a farmer's market, for example. We also have what we call My Account. We have all of our accounts. We have automated meters now, so we're able to read all of the meters. We actually, instead of getting a bill once every 2 months, our customers get a bill once a month, but we get reads every 15 minutes. So we have lots of data, and we like to share that data with our customers. So we have a My Account. It's actually something you can pull up on your tablet or your smartphone and see your own water consumption. So we're able to communicate directly with our customers as well through that venue. And, of course, during the drought, we did a number of different types of outreach, such as television commercials and marketing ads, etc., to really get people's attention.
Wow. Yeah, as I said, I was amazed when you came and made that presentation in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You know, one of the aspects of the program that I find fascinating is your wastewater reuse strategy, which is, I think, really unique. And it combines both what we call centralized and decentralized components with potable and non-potable end users. Can you kind of go through that for our listeners and so they understand it a little bit better?
Certainly, yeah. In San Francisco, we have taken a unique approach, as you've mentioned, where we're looking at both centralized and decentralized water recycling facilities. And when we talk about centralized, we're talking about taking water from our wastewater treatment plant, the utility building a recycled water treatment plant, producing water that's fit for irrigation, for example. So we're building a treatment plant to irrigate over 1,000 acres of Golden Gate Park, adjacent golf course, Lincoln Park Golf Course, and parts of the Presidio. So that's what we've referred to as a centralized recycled water project. A decentralized water recycled water project is looking at more of a building scale or a neighborhood scale. So if you came to visit us at our headquarters, which we hope you do someday, we actually treat all of our black water in our building, which is basically wastewater that would normally go to the sewer system. We divert that through what's called an engineered wetland treatment system. So outside of our building is a large planter boxes, but it's actually an on-site water treatment system. It's a decentralized water treatment system where we treat that water so we can safely reuse that water to flush our toilets and our urinals in the building. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to reduce our potable water consumption by 60%. So that's an idea of a decentralized treatment system. It's not just happening in our building, though. Salesforce, for example, gets a lot of press here in San Francisco. It's the tallest building. It's 1,070 feet. They're installing a black water treatment system, a different kind of, it's called a membrane bioreactor facility. It's just more of a packaged treatment system in the basement, not using wetland treatment. But they're going to treat all that black water, and they're going to use that to flush toilets throughout the tower itself. And we're also seeing new developments like our Chase Arena, the sports arena. They are treating gray water and rainwater and condensate to flush the toilets in the arena, as well as the adjacent office buildings, which is more of a neighborhood district scale type of decentralized water treatment system. So we really have a unique approach here in San Francisco.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a couple companies in the United States that makes these machines that say they take air out, they suck in the air, and they can convert it to water. And they say it works pretty good near the oceans and bays and things like that. Is that something that your organization has ever looked into? And they're controlled by solar as well.
Actually, we are, as part of our innovations program, we are exploring what we call atmospheric water generation technologies, mm-hmm. which is, there's a variety of them in the marketplace today. So a traditional, more passive is like a fog catcher, which is like basically a mesh that captures the fog and produces water. And so that's one form, but there's also some new companies in the marketplace that are using solar panels, for example, to produce water from the atmosphere. And so we are exploring those and exploring the applicability of those types of technologies here in San Francisco to put at community gardens to produce water for irrigation, but are also going to look at the availability of that water for drinking purposes that perhaps could help us with our resiliency efforts here in San Francisco.
Yeah, we had a former guest on the...
There we go.
Sorry,
his mic was off.
we had a former guest on the show. I can't remember how long ago it was, Paula, but telling us about the various atmospheric water generation projects they're doing and been successful with. Especially, I think this person was telling us about installations in Peru, South America, up on ridgelines where you know every day they have the early morning fog, so to speak, right? The overcast days that come in, and it was a dual purpose operation where in the morning when the fog they would get just lots of water. I can't remember all the data and the specs right now. And then the solar panels would kick in when the overcast cleared, and they would generate power.
Well, Chris, I think you know we're doing a project with the Weiland Foundation at the Montage Hotel in Laguna Beach, where they're instituting a capture system and also one of these atmospheric type machines. And they had contacted me, a couple from the Global Waterworks, wanted to put a system at our Toro headquarters, in the irrigation headquarters where we work, and trying that on our community garden. I think that would be
Giving Garden.
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty neat thing. And I see a lot of that, not only for the United States, but I also see a lot of that for third world countries. I guess the only thing that third world countries would have to worry about is servicing it and getting parts, because that's usually the hardest thing in third world countries to control. Technology.
Yeah. Well, I just thought it was particular because, you know, people know, especially here on the West Coast, know San Francisco's weather patterns and the fog that rolls in, the famous pictures forever and ever we've seen of the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm just so happy, Paula, that some of large organizations like yourselves are, taking a forward-looking approach at some of these technologies. It's commendable.
Yeah. The system that you were talking about for the membrane, do they do anything else besides the membrane? I mean, do they use UV or any other sort of?
Yeah, most of these decentralized smaller treatment facilities do involve UV ultraviolet light as one of the treatment train technologies within the treatment train. That's a common practice, as well as chlorine. Part of our program here in San Francisco is to make sure we have the appropriate treatment of this water, so we're protective of public health. That's our number one goal, and so we've established a whole oversight and management program for decentralized water treatment systems.
So
we're also expanding that our program to have and encourage some of these systems to install heat recovery technologies with these on-site water treatment systems. So not are they only saving drinking water, using the right water for the right use, in other words, non-potable water to flush toilets, but also to produce thermal energy to help offset some of the energy requirements for these decentralized water treatment systems.
So
really excited about that new initiative as well.
Well, that's cool. Just because I don't live in San Francisco and I'm not, in tune to, everything that you guys are doing, except what I read, when I read in articles. So when they put these systems in, like the decentralized and so forth, how often, and just for the health portion, how often do they have to get certified or somebody check all this stuff all the time?
So that's a great question. When a building, when it's either the public or private property owner wants to install an on-site water treatment system, there's a process that they go through, a 10-step process, and one of those steps is preparing an engineering report. So we look at what are the technologies that they're going to utilize in their treatment system, make sure they're appropriate, then they get issued a permit, and then ongoing monitoring and reporting. Most of these systems are automated, so there are companies that are popping up that are going around and servicing these different treatment systems here in San Francisco. On average, we've heard it's, maybe 5 hours per week, per system, and so it's not a full-time operator that's required.
I read about, Chris and I read about, and I'm sure you have too, like in Central California where they're getting dirty water.
The tap, you mean?
Yeah. And I guess what gets to me is, the EPA has regulations. I know the state has regulations to that. And I know they're putting a plan in place to consolidate those to the bigger agencies to clean that all up. But I always wonder how long do they let that go before something, like Flint, Michigan. They wait years to find out they got a problem. And, I worry about, what you guys are doing is excellent. I applaud you immensely. And like I said, I was blown away by your presentation a couple of weeks back. Are we, as Californians, going to be assured that the water will be monitored more regularly all over the state and making sure that when people or the water agencies or these decentralized places don't comply, that they're going to come down on them and make things happen? That I think is the biggest frightening thing to a lot of our listeners that had called in before and said, hey, we hear all this stuff that they're going to do this and this and this, but then we find out they didn't do it. And then what happens? There's no retributions for it or things. But how do you see that?
Well, I can comment on decentralized treatment systems. San Francisco, again, we have an oversight and management program that there is a permit issued with requirements of ongoing maintenance of these systems and reporting to the city and county of San Francisco. There's also statewide legislation on decentralized water treatment systems. I'm not referencing your other systems here, talking about But there has to be a local program of oversight and management. And so that's the whole point of what San Francisco has done and what we always stress when we talk with other folks considering having decentralized water treatment systems in their community, that there certainly needs to be an oversight and management program make sure these systems are protective of public health. And that's what we've done here in San Francisco.
Okay. Well, I know you have great passion for what you do. Can you tell us, I know you mentioned some of the projects you work on. What was your favorite project to work on and direct?
That's a hard question. I think the decentralized program is very interesting because I think and exciting because it's something the utility wants to do in terms of promoting, again, as I mentioned, the right water for the right use, so not using drinking water to flush toilets and to irrigate our landscape.
Right.
But it was also a partnership with the private sector and the community, developers who are building new buildings, who want to build green buildings and want to install these types of treatment systems. And they were looking to us to streamline the process for them and enable, you know, a permitting process so they could move forward with these systems. And I also chair a national partnership with public health regulators and utilities across the country. And so it's led to lots of partnerships on a national level as well. So I think it's an exciting opportunity as long as we're doing it right in terms of doing the right science, understanding the right water quality standards and oversight and management of these systems. We see this as another opportunity to deal with our water challenges that we have.
Sure. So we see, we've heard you say as a public utility commission, you service water, power, and sewer. Do you have any connection to stormwater reclamation? I mean, we know it rains a lot in San Francisco. Is there any association there that you can talk about?
Well, yeah, so our utility, as I mentioned, water, wastewater, and power. Within our wastewater enterprise, San Francisco does have a combined sewer system. So about 95% of the city is combined. So that means that both the stormwater and the sanitary sewage is combined in the same set of pipes that goes to our treatment plants prior to discharge to the San Francisco Bay and Pacific Ocean. So it's a combined system for almost all of the city. And so within our wastewater enterprise, we have a stormwater management ordinance and a number of stormwater activities that they are working on. But as I mentioned early on in my comments, that we have a one water approach, so we work collaboratively. And part of our on-site water reuse program does include reusing stormwater and rainwater.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So how do you see, from your vision, where do you see us in 10 years, 15 years? And given the fact that we all in California are experiencing 100-year-old pipes in the ground and everything else, how do you see us going forward into managing that in general?
I see I'm optimistic. I see that there's opportunities for lots of regional collaboration and a lot of collaboration among partners, whether it's a partnership between a water and a wastewater utility or a partnership between two different counties to solve our water challenges. We also have, you know, technology. There's a lot of technology on the market. It's advancing quickly that can potentially provide some solutions we're not even thinking about today. So I think that there is both, again, regional partnerships, institutional and governance issues that people are working very hard on today and working hard right now. And I see those as positive advancements as well as technology.
It's just great to see somebody practicing what they preach, right, Rob?
I know, it's awesome.
Right there at your. And by the way, thanks for the invitation. We'd love to come up there and visit. So maybe the next time Rob and I are in the area, we might let you know. We might knock on your door. But practicing what you preach, being very open to new technologies in the future, you know, all the kind of stuff that that Rob and I love to hear and try to look at and reach out from people that come on the show to tell us more about it. I want to ask you a question here, Rob, and I know it's not on your question list, so you can slap my hand if I'm going off thing here. But do you how affected are you as a public utilities commission by state and local legislation? I mean, the stuff that Chris Maven reports on every day. How does that affect you?
Well, you know, if there's state legislation that you know, of course we have to follow state legislation. But I mean, I it doesn't impact us in a we're in a negative way. If that's what I'm not quite sure how does it impact us. Of course, we have to follow any new state legislation. So you know, there's lots of opportunities to participate in stakeholder groups that either the state agencies form. And an ability to get involved in the process and the implementation of new legislation. So, again, I see all of this as a collaborative partnership between utilities and the state and new legislation. So it's all of us are in it together and working to address our challenges. And it's more complicated than it was in the past, but I think, again, we have more openness and partnerships and willingness to look to the future and look to potentially rethinking our infrastructure and how we do our business.
Great. Well, Paula, we want to thank you very much for being on the show.
We appreciate
your valuable time. And I know our listeners gained a lot of knowledge from the conversation today. And again, thanks for coming on to the Water Zone. We appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation. I enjoyed it. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
Very much.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take one little quick break for commercial, and then we'll be right back.
Are you presently part of the irrigation industry as a worker or business owner? Do you want to learn how you and your staff can boost your knowledge and productivity? Then you should check out Irrigator Technical Training School. Irrigator Tech is the leading source of quality instruction serving all facets of the irrigation industry. Their courses provide a basic, easy-to-understand approach that raises the skill level, competency, and professionalism of landscape and irrigation personnel through practical education and services. Irrigator Tech combines classroom and real-life hands-on training, leading to a well-recognized certification that both customers and employers demand. Irrigator Tech's specialized courses can help you quickly become a certified irrigation auditor or a certified installer, repair, maintenance, or backflow technician. Courses also include certificates in smart water application or becoming a certified tree worker. Most importantly, all certifications are state recognized, and Irrigator Tech offers annual renewal classes to help keep your certification up to date. So whether you work in California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, or Arizona, there's an Irrigator Tech class near you. For more information on how to jumpstart your career, call Irrigator Tech toll-free 866-614-1755. Or visit them on the web at irrigatortech.com. That's toll-free, 866-614-1755, and on the web at irrigatortech.com.
All right. Well, welcome back again. And that was a great guest.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Just a wealth of information and a forward-looking view, right? Just spirited and
a lot of passion with what she does. Yeah. I appreciate that. And like I said, I was blown away when I saw her couple weeks back, and I thought she'd be perfect for the show, which I learned a lot. And I really would like to go and tour some of those buildings and see the decentralized systems.
We got an invitation.
Yeah, maybe we can film it because you know we broadcast here in video.
Yeah,
and
do a little segment on it.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome. So what we got going? We were gonna go out and check these three homes.
Right. So on the Extreme Water Makeover. So just make a couple of real quick notes about that, right? Because we got a couple of calls during the show inquiring. Lots and lots of contestants, if you will.
You get calls?
Put up that way. I didn't get any calls, because it was the way to do it. I got people that get them.
You got people. I got people too.
Yeah. So keep patient, folks. Municipal Water of Orange County. The notices will be coming out here next week. It takes a little while. There's a lot of them, and it's been a little hard to keep up, but we're there.
Yep.
We're not behind at all. So, all right. So what else we got here as we close out the